All right, everybody. So today on the podcast, we have the Jeffs, Jeff Albert and Jeffrey Verdi Schofield. What's up, guys?
Good morning. Ready to do it.
Not too much.
All right. So I thought you guys would be a good pairing to bring up because I've done a few roundtable podcasts this year, and I think I'm going to keep that theme going for a little bit. And some of them were people, like Omar Issa and Eric Helms, right? That's like they're already together on Iron Culture. But some of the people were more just maybe had not connected previously, but I thought it would have good perspectives. And with you guys, it's kind of almost like old school versus new school, but also like very different thoughts and training regimens, right? So, Jeff Alberts, you've been training for over 30 years, right? Competing for how many years now?
30.
30, yeah, okay. And
That means I'm old, man. I'm getting older.
well, you're 52?
52, going on
Yeah,
25, though.
right, of course. And then Jeff Schofield, you are early 30s, been lifting for under 10 years though. Never competed, but have gotten very lean. So it's again, it is kind of the old school versus new school, but also some very big differences in I would say training methodology. So I want to dive into that as well. Jeff Alberts, I think you had mentioned this was maybe last year. Might have been, I don't know if I heard you say this on a podcast or maybe it was us talking. And you had commented how you had seen some of Jeff's progress. And you had, I think maybe like it was arm growth. And you were almost considering, like, oh, should I do higher volume and try that again? But then you thought to yourself, okay, no, like I know it works. I've done that before. Is that right? Am I remembering that correctly?
I might have said something to that effect. Like,
Yeah.
it's like, you see someone like Jeff and you're like, damn, well, if it worked for him, maybe it can work for me. And I even caught myself doing this yesterday with Alberto's guy, Brian from Hong Kong. He's made some significant back growth. And I'm like, maybe I do need to do some of those angles for my back movements, So it's
Yeah.
so even 30 years later, 38 years later, you'll see someone doing something. You're like, oh, maybe that's the thing that's going to change things for me. So I'm still old school, but I'm still very open-minded to trying new things. But I realize myself, like looking at Jeff going, okay, if I do that volume, it's going to crush me. I'm not 25 in reality, I'm 52, and I've done the high volume in the past. And every time I do it, usually I don't see gains, I just see aches and pains. So it's like, well, let me just make sure I'm staying in my own lane here because of that experience.
Yeah. And after almost 20 years, I get the same, which I don't necessarily even see it as a bad thing. Like, it's almost nice to have something to make you feel like, oh, maybe this is another thing. Like, not to a delusional extent, but to a new excitement thing. It's just like, this is a new routine or technique I can try that gets me excited to do it anymore. But to the same, the same end, you also have to realize, hey, if you've done so many things, you've probably, after especially 30 plus years, realized what does and doesn't work for you for the most part. Jeff Schofield, I'm wondering, have you ever had the opposite where you think, okay, I'm doing so much volume, but I see some of these guys who have been in the game for a long time who have maybe for the most part avoided serious injury, save joints and whatnot. Maybe I could get away with a lot less.
Well, it's funny because I know Jeff has done lower volume in the past, and then he increased his volume because he started with like a high intensity-ish training mindset, and then he sort of took a more moderate approach later. I started way, way, way high at times, doing German volume training on deadlifts, and then finishing up with 3 sets of 20 after that because I guess 10 by 10 on deadlifts is not enough. Stuff like that. Like I started. I mean, I do way more moderate volume now than I used to. I mean, I've done some just, deadlifting 30,000 kilos of volume in a single session, stuff like that. And so when people see my training now and they say, oh, that's a lot of volume, this is actually way down from what I used to do. And so for me, it's a lot easier than, running 80 miles a week or doing any of the stuff that I was doing before. And so I think I've noticed a trend that a lot of people sort of moderate the variables over time. And so, I have taken inspiration from some guys in the high intensity sphere where, okay, if they're seeing good results from one set and I'm here crushing 40 sets for back a week, like maybe I could change my technique to get more out of each set. Maybe I could improve the quality of the reps, the control, the, you know, et cetera. And so I have definitely reduced my volume over time while keeping the effort and actually increasing the effort over time as well. Because when you're doing that much volume, your effort almost gets diluted, where you think you're training hard, but you're just tired. You're just tired. And so it feels all out, but you're just not a good effort every single set. And so I've actually dropped my volume down quite a bit, and it's still higher than most people, I would say. But then again, I'm also not as strong as a lot of other natural lifters. So it kind of cancels out in a way. Like I know Alex Leonidas, he's more of like a two set per exercise kind of guy, where I'm more like three or four. But on a lot of movements, he's like 50% stronger than me, right? Mm-hmm. So it kind of cancels out that way. So yeah, I definitely moderated the training variables as I've gone along, and my volume is quite a bit lower than it was, especially compared to 4, 5, 6 years ago.
So that's the thing about comparing, like I don't think like this is, I don't think this is a versus. I think this is a lot of similarities. This fact that your volume was higher in the past, now it's lower in comparison to that. But when you look at you and me, it's like mine appears low to you, but in the reality is that we've both done the same exact thing. We just each have our own baseline. And I think that's when people look on the internet and they're looking at people's volumes, you can't compare yourself to an individual. You have to have some type of starting point. And that's what we both done. Like, okay, I started from the lower camp and realized like, well, I can't keep crushing myself because this is just killing me. And then Eric Helms, Alberto Nunez, like, hey, Jeff, why don't you bring down the intensity and let's add a little more volume there, but not as high intense. So I'm like, okay, let me do three or four sets instead of just two and crushing myself. Then you realize like, oh, actually, hey, this is a pretty good response here. My joints don't hurt as much. My recovery is a little bit better. So in a sense, what I've done is just found sweet spots. I found my range. It's anywhere between 2 to 4 sets. If I don't have time, I'm going to go down to 2 sets and go a little bit more intense so I can get out of the gym fast. And then the question becomes like, what's better, 2 sets to absolute failure, or is it 3 or 4 sets with 2 or 3 in the tank? I don't know. Like, I would have to do a perfect study on myself and keep all variables controlled. And I'm talking not just training variables, but nutrition, sleep, hydration, like life factors, like all these things. And so when people ask me, if you could go back in time, this is a question I get all the time because I'm getting older. If you can go back in time, what would you change? I'm like, I have no idea. And I'm not going to stress on it. All I know, it's like all the experiences I've gone through is the reason I'm able to get on a podcast like this and share it with you guys. So I don't have any regrets of the success or the failures because it's who I am now.
Yeah. I'm wondering, so Jeff Alberts, you had mentioned that, well, at least I believe that you're training usually 3 days a week. And when you say like 2 to 4 sets, is that per exercise or per body part per session?
Per exercise.
Okay. And you're still in that like 6 to 8 sets per body part
that's,
per week?
That's the average. Like right now it's even lower than that. And that the reason for that is because we always look at a lot of us, we tend to look here instead of looking at the bigger picture. So acutely, it's like, I get this, like, oh, your volume is so low. How can you only do like 2 to 4 sets for quads right now? Well, on the broad scheme of things is that I just came off a contest prep. I spent an entire year of basically getting down to like close to 5-6% body fat. I'm tired physically, mentally, emotionally. I'm tired. Like, I don't want to do more in the gym right now. Plus, I have you factor in how much energy was taken away from my family by going through a contest prep like that. So for me to do more gym time takes away from them. They deserve to have more time, but also I need a break. So the 1 times per week with lower volume right now is a breath of fresh air.
Yeah.
Because every time I get into the gym now, I'm ready. I'm actually motivated to train. Or at the end of prep, I was like, man, this is not fun at all anymore.
Yep.
So eventually, like once I start to feel a little bit better, you know, family dynamics probably a little bit in a better place, then I might go back to 4 days a week. I might, you know, bring it back to 6 to 8 sets, maybe 10 sets. Because sometimes 10 sets a week, I can recover from that. And that's the thing too. It's like Jeff knows this. Like if those 10 sets are really just intense and they're good effort, high quality. Like it's hard to do more than that. Like it's just gonna be hard from a recovery standpoint. And I'm 52 years old. I'm no spring chicken anymore. So I really have to pay attention to how I'm training, how I'm recovering, like even more so than, even 5 years ago.
So can you feel that, Jeff, like compared to, let's say, when you were 45, there's a notable difference in your recovery and just day to day?
Yeah, it's a little bit more diminished recovery wise, but more so from a joint perspective. Like now it's like when I lift heavy, there's a little hesitation in it. It's like, well, let me make sure that I'm really controlling things. So I can't put up the same numbers even, but I've been slowing like rep speed down even more so than I have in the past. And you guys know I'm a pretty slow trainer as it is, but it's even slower now and more controlled because of that hesitation, like that slight fear. And you don't want to be going into a gym session with fear. Even if you're 20 years old, you don't want to have like, I don't want to snap myself here because then you're going to lift timid. It's almost like a football player going across the middle. You don't want to try to catch the ball like this because your body's going to be really tight and you're going to get smashed and you're going to get injured. You want to basically go in there, with a lot of confidence.
Yeah, no, there's definitely some exercises now that I mean, I don't even do, for example, like one rep max bench press or anything like that anymore, but just certain things where I'm just like, ugh, I just don't know how this next rep is going to go, and I don't like the feeling of that. So I kind of stay in my lane with certain lifts at this point. So Jeff Schofield, how many, you're doing what, like still 20 to 30 sets? Is that roughly per body part?
So I don't, all right. So I used to track my volume religiously to the point where it was the volume became the goal. And when something becomes the goal, every other training variable tends to shape around that goal. So if you think, okay, well, I need to be hitting, I'm not seeing results from 20 sets for back. I need to go to 25. Oh, I need to go to 30. And so your proximity to failure drops off, your effort drops off. Other variables, your technique drop off. And so I was sort of chasing volume for a while. And now I sometimes track volume in hindsight. So someone might ask, oh, how many sets are you doing for this muscle group? I actually have to go back into my training log and add it all. And so I train a little bit more instinctively than I used to, where I wasn't as, and I used to be very numbers focused, and now I'm more like, okay, I did two sets of RDLs. They were sufficiently hard. I know doing a third one is probably not actually going to do anything. Whereas before, I'd be like, okay, well, I have to hit these numbers. I have to hit this volume. And so it doesn't really matter how I feel. I'm not going to even tap into that. It's just, okay, well, I'm doing five sets because that's what I have written down, or that's what I think I need to do based on what I was doing before. So I do train more instinctively, more intuitively. And I do auto-regulate my volume much more than I used to. And I've had times where I did one set of RDLs, and I was wrecked afterwards. I'm like, all right, wrecked in a good way. I didn't experience that until after I had my QL injury, and retweaked it probably 8, 9, 10 times over the course of 10 months. And yeah, anytime you approach anything where you got injured before and you had trouble walking afterwards, like, yeah, there is that element of fear. And so, yeah, I do lift differently now compared to before that injury. And actually, it's helped in a lot of ways because I do control the weight more. My technique is a lot cleaner, a lot smoother. And it actually, I mean, that's one good way to learn physiology, getting injured. And I didn't know what a QL was before I ripped it up. So it's like, it actually was a nice teaching tool. And that was my best year of quad gains anyway, because I had to actually diversify my training and find out how to work around that issue. And I found out some stuff pretty instrumental in creating new gains.
Was
Actually,
very similar. Again, like I don't think we're much different. We're just like he's chasing volume in the early stages. I'm chasing intensity and chasing load. And then I tear my calf in 2013, chasing load, five hundred plus pounds on a Smith machine. Like, why? Like, why was I doing that? Well, because I was able to, but to a point. And then it was like you said, like Jeff said, it's a teaching tool. And I'm like, well, how can I get a stimulus with less now? Like, what other ways can I train more intelligently? You know, especially as you get older. And it's kind of interesting is that I might have 30 years of competitive experience, 38 years of training experience. I think you got what, 10, Jeff? Is
Yeah, not
we're both learning
nine.
how to become more efficient over time. And, you know, when we talk about being instinctive, like I don't count my sets either. Like when someone asks me on Instagram, I'm like, I don't know, I got to look at what I just wrote down. Because, like, I know, like, if two sets is adequate, I know if three sets is adequate, I know if one set, like, I've done one set too at times. And you're just like, okay, I don't need any more. Like, that muscle's just fired up. And then I think, okay, after an RDL, I might have to do a leg curl. So it's like, well, if I do both of those with high volume, tomorrow I'm not gonna be able to walk. So it's like you start to learn like where your sweet spots are when it comes to set volume, when it comes to intense, all the variables. So it's just more of an experience factor. And any advanced lifter you ask, we're probably gonna have similar answers across the board because we know ourselves a lot more than like if I go to watch a bunch of YouTube videos, I can almost guarantee you I'm not gonna learn too much more than what I already know about myself. I tend to look at other sports now more than the realm of bodybuilding because they have a better grasp on like the fundamentals of supply and demand, like how to manage fatigue and these things. Like I could look at football and like, okay, these guys don't play more than once a week for a reason. Same thing with NBA. When they play back-to-back NBA games, the winning percentage on the second day is a lot lower. It's like, well, why is that? Well, that's because they're tired. They don't have the same pop in their step. So the teams that are coming in fresh, they're winning more.
I
So those
wonder.
things I tend to look at more so now than the bodybuilding realm.
Yeah, two things on that. One, I can't believe it's been 10 years since you tore your calf. Because I frequently think about the fact because you're the only person I know who's torn their calf, and so there are some times where I get to some like intense stretches, and I remember that you tore your calf, and I'm like, oh, because there's some things where I just think like nobody gets injured like this. Like if you're doing a heavy barbell bench. Like, yeah, people do definitely tear their pecs, right? If you're doing a heavy preacher curl, yeah, people tear their bicep. But like there's other things where it's like, all right, I don't really see a lot of injuries with that. Like a heavy shoulder press, I don't hear people like you maybe get like chronic shoulder issues, but it's not like, oh, you tore your delt off, right? So and calf raise is another one that I just don't think of too many injuries. But then I think of good old Jeff Alberts and I think, all right, maybe back off a little bit.
Yeah, because I mean, it's like any other muscle, though, really. And like
Yeah.
I train full range of motion. So I worked myself up like regularly over 500 pounds. And that specific day, I can tell you, I was probably a little dehydrated going in because the first exercise, I think I did squats, they didn't feel right. I felt off, like everything, it felt kind of heavy. And then I just ignored it. Don't be a pussy. Just get in there and keep doing it. So finished that exercise, went to leg curl, same thing, felt off. But ego's like, just keep pushing, powering through. Well, second set of calf raises, about third or fourth rep. Nope, wasn't gonna happen. And it just snap city. Form wasn't bad or anything like that. Like I wasn't lifting heavier than I normally was lifting. It's just that particular day, my body is just like, nope. And yeah, you just rethink things. So now when I go into training sessions and I don't feel 100%, like whether it's physically or mentally, I'll just tap out. I'll just say, you know what? I'm done here. I'm gonna walk out and I'm not gonna shrink. It's not like because I didn't finish the workout, all of a sudden I'm gonna start to lose muscle mass. If anything, it's a good call because now when I do go back to the gym, whether it's the next day or day after, I'm fully recovered. I'm like 100%. I'm ready to have a good quality session. I'm gonna get more out of myself because of that. And then the following day, I'm gonna be able to recover more because I'm not trying to train when I'm already tired. So I've just got like things like that. Just as horrific as it was, it was definitely a huge eye opener, and it taught me to train with a lot more humility. Because up until that point, it was just a lot of ego chasing load, chasing intensity. Like a lot of it too is like for show. Like I want to go to failure and beyond because I want to show the other guys in the gym that I can outperform them in a sense. I used to train with this garbage man. My neighbor was a garbage man, big dude. He's like, we both had egos. He was a little more loud than I was, but we would be screaming in the gym, come on, like just going crazy. So it's, if you guys saw videos of me back then, it's like, wait, that's not Jeff. Because this is like before the internet. But yeah, I was one of those guys who just like really just go after it with intensity. So just over time, I've learned to kind of change my approach, change my style. And that's all it is, in my opinion, is style. Like when you see Jeff, I know Jeff's a little bit looser of form, and I'm like really tight. And so people will say, well, which is better? I'm like, well, if you look at his form, it's standardized. Just look at him in isolation. It's standardized, and he's used to it. And that style probably fits for him a lot better than it would for me at this point. Because if I did it, I'd probably snap myself up. But again, look at any other sports. You got wide receivers, you got running backs, you got offensive linemen. Like the body types are different. How they play is different. Some have more endurance, some have more power, et cetera. But when we look at bodybuilding, oftentimes we're like, we have to be one way.
Yeah, that the form was actually another one I was going to ask you guys about because
I know you were.
definitely
I know that was going to be.
that's definitely a difference between you guys. I don't get like too strict on the form. In fact, I would much rather see somebody be a little lax in form than to the point where I don't think it's really anybody to, like we know in the community, but you do see some people who are so hyper focused on perfect form that it's almost like they're not trying or they're just not lifting enough. I think especially with some of the back work, like I've referenced this a number of times, but when I was a lot younger, I would do these very strict barbell rows and I'd have to like slowly bring it to my navel. And it, I mean, the weight that you could use is maybe half to be able to do that. Now, I think that now I can kind of do both. And we know some of the stuff with length and partials, like you could still go slow and control, then just allow maybe range of motion to go more with the lengthened portion and not have to have that peak contraction. But point is, I see it especially with back work that some people, it's like they're almost so strict that it maybe is to the detriment. Not that I'm saying I think people should just be slinging the weight or anything, but obviously both can work.
I've talked too much. I'm gonna let Jeff talk.
Okay. Yeah, I look at it as kind of a continuum. You see guys like, I don't know, Branch Warren or something on the one hand where they're just absolutely, it's as much weight as possible, as loose as possible. Partner is helping near the end and they're going, 8 reps beyond failure. And I do think that is just it's not sustainable. You're getting stimulus for sure. I mean, it'll if you survive it, you'll grow. It's like those Kenyan distance running camps where they took 1,000 runners and just destroyed them with all the training, all the variables turned all the way up, and then if you survive that, you were a world champion, But for an individual to choose the best strategy, that's probably not great because there's a good chance that you won't survive it, especially long term. On the other hand, you have guys, and I have seen this, where they are ridiculously controlled, where everything is just slow, 10 second reps. And I do think that training like that can get in the way of effort, as you said, Dave. And I've heard people say stuff like, oh, I lost my mind muscle connection. And I'm just sitting there thinking, yeah, well, that's okay. You don't have to have like this contracting feeling all the time. Your muscles are still working, even if you don't get like that sort of cramping sense all the time. And later reps, you might lose that full mind muscle connection, and that's okay. And so most people are going to be somewhere in the middle. I'm definitely a little bit more on the loose side of things, but only on some movements. I don't really see the point in doing that on a bench press where the strength curve it's most difficult in the middle. And so those are more controlled than they used to be. Same thing with a shoulder press. Same thing with pretty much any lower body compound, squats, hinges. Those are generally pretty controlled. I'll tend to get a little bit looser on like a cable lateral raise, where I'll lean into it a little bit. I'll get more of a stretch. I'll get more momentum on something like a spider curl, where it's most difficult at the top. Maybe I'll use a little bit of shoulders or an incline dumbbell curl. On the later reps, maybe I'll allow the chest pop to get into it. It would help if it was just with the fixed elbows, but I'm allowing just a little bit of lean to get the weight up, then controlling it down. I think you have to control the weight down. If you're not controlling the weight down, there's really not much point in cheating. So if someone is just heaving back and forth, I don't think there's really much point in that. If you heave a little bit on the way up, but then you control the way down, I think that can be quite productive. Is it riskier? Probably. Yeah, probably at least marginally. But I think that if someone is maybe a little bit younger in training age, that risk might be worth it. But I think it's also worth considering what you might want in the future, right? Like what the future you might want. So I think the way you train is where I, or at least will, is closer to where I will be when my training age is 15, 20 years, 25 years. Because even if I'm seeing good results, I'm not like a special snowflake. And I look at most guys who are, they've been training 20, 30 years. And yes, they have controlled things more as time went on. And they got a little bit stricter as time went on. And so I'll probably go that same way at some point. And I try to only cheat on the very safe exercises, the ones where, you know,
are fairly snap-free. Let me ask you something real quick, Jeff. Can I interrupt? Is it really cheating though? Because the way you're describing it is, I'm cheating, but is it really cheating? Because you've standardized your form and you're controlling it on the way down. So is it technically cheating, right? Or is it, hey, I'm actually using really good technique and form that's safe for me right now, because you have that control?
Well, that's I almost think like it's not the right word for it, because it implies like you're doing something nefarious,
right? Or cheating. Exactly.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, it's like you're not doing something wrong. If you're swinging for the trees and you're at high risk for injury, that's different. Then yeah, you're cheating and you're risking injury. But like if you're fully controlled, even quote unquote cheating it up, right, you're still in total control doing it.
Yeah, exactly. Like people don't realize it because they don't necessarily have the experience of doing it. So they might see it and think, oh, that's not controlled. But it's almost like if you see someone typing on their computer and they miss a keystroke, you might not be able to see it, but they can feel it. You can feel if you hit the wrong keystroke. So you can feel if it's getting to the point where, okay, that's not really productive. It's not as controlled as I want it to be. But from an outside observer, it might not look that different. Like the rep that you know is a good, solid rep that's useful, and the rep where you're like, okay, that's getting to the point where it's just not, I'm just sort of moving around. I'm just moving my body in the weight and space, and it's not productive. Those two things that transcend from the useful rep, they might look almost identical to someone else, but you can feel it. You can feel the difference very, very actively. And even on different movements, you can feel like, okay, this is just, like, I would never cheat on this. It's just not useful. On other movements, you know, I might cheat pretty early in the set, and I might go like 10 or 15 reps beyond failure, right? If I'm doing, you know, let's say a dumbbell rear delt raise with my chest supported, the most difficult part is at the very top. And so I might hit failure 5 reps in and then start getting partials. And then when I could barely get partials and I'm only getting these last little bits, then I start, you know, getting a little bit of oomph into it. And I feel like that's quite productive, you know? And so it really does depend on the movement. It depends on how you feel. It's sometimes difficult to explain, and it's easy to criticize because you just see thing. Saying that feeling is quite challenging at times.
I can't help but think if Mike Israetel was here, he would say, hey, if you and your wife are swingers, is it really cheating? Right. It's all contextual. And, you know, I would say if you're, you know, you plan a cheat meal, right, it's not really cheating. Right. So I think that's a good point that Jeff brought up.
But I agree with what you said, Dave, like earlier, it's like you can like if your form is like so strict where you're purposely slowing down concentrics to a point, it's like ask yourself, OK, how much muscle you're actually recruiting there?
Yeah.
You know, so it's like people see me, you're a slow trainer, but my concentrics for the most part, and this is exercise dependent, I'm going as fast as I can. It's just I'm not moving the weight fast because it's heavy. But there's a lot of force being applied there. It's like I use a grocery cart analogy. Like if I'm in a grocery store and I got just a full load of groceries and I want to push this thing across the store, I'm not gonna just push it super slow because it's only gonna travel so far. If I want to get it across the store, I'm gonna have to push as hard as I can. But it's not like that thing's gonna go flying across the store. It's gonna go slow. It's like that's kind of my style. It's like I'm very controlled. It looks slow. It looks like I'm purposely slowing things down, but I'm actually not. I'm slowing the eccentrics down quite a bit because, like Jeff's saying, like I want to ensure that I'm getting, because that's an important part of a rep is the eccentric. It's actually where you're the most strongest. So if I can hold it a little bit longer, I'm going to get that much more tension per rep. So again, it's just the way I look at the form thing. Like I used to be more of the, my stance has changed. I go, oh man, that's like if I would have seen Jeff's form for the very first time, let's say 10 years ago, I would have been like, oh gosh, that's trash, man. And then I would be like, hey, his form sucks ass. And I would be like, mine's so much better because it's like an identity thing. It's like you're defending like your style, your approach. It's like an identity. But now it's like I could kind of see past that and I can like, okay, let me watch a few sets. They all look the same. So it's standardized, so as long as it's safe, it's working for him. And then same thing for me. It's like I put a post up, I think, on Instagram like a week or so ago. I don't know if you guys know who Rick Barry is. It might be before your time, but
No.
really good NBA player. Used to play for the Golden State Warriors back in the day. We're talking like 70s or maybe early 80s, somewhere in there. His free throws, he would shoot them granny style, underhand.
Really?
And he knocked down 80, almost 90% of his free throws for his career doing it in that fashion. And then now you look at Steph Curry and he's shooting like 91%, close to 91% for his career. Not that much difference there. Two different styles, two different approaches, but they standardized their technique to can basically the same amount of free throws over a career. So it's kind of the same thing here. It's like you look at Jeff, you're like, okay, he's shooting like Steph Curry. I'm shooting like Rick Barry, but we're still getting the same effect, same output.
Jeff, you mentioned sports a few times here, and I wonder if you guys maybe have insights with your own clients on this. This was more of an old school thought, but I wonder if it holds up at all, that some of these athletes that would be, quote unquote, fast twitch athletes and whatnot, they would do better with lower volumes and higher intensities because it was enough, right? Whereas I know Jeff Schofield, you came from an endurance running background and you do very high volume. And you could say, well, that's just because that's, again, maybe like your natural muscle fibers, or is it that you kind of trained yourself to get used to these high volumes? You guys think there's anything to that in terms of athletic background and then that leading to different responses to high versus low volume?
Probably, yeah. It's hard to tease out nature versus nurture. It really is, because you can't like A/B test this stuff because we only get this one life. We only time's always going forward, right? And so the experiment's always changing. And so someone asked me about this pretty recently, and so do I do more volume because I was a distance runner, and being a distance runner helped me with my endurance, my heart size, my capillarization, all this kind of stuff. And so it helps me recover or helps me do the work. So work capacity, recover capacity. Or is it because that I was born the type of person who would be good at endurance running, and that type of person is also good at handling a lot of volume? And it's probably a bit of both. It's probably a bit of both, where some nature, some nurture, some a bit of both, right? And so it's hard to separate the two, hard of what could be what. It might not even be fiber type, right? I think it's an assumption a lot of people make, but I've never gotten a test. I don't know what fiber types I am in various muscle groups, and it's not necessarily a bad assumption. Especially given my, underwhelming strength numbers and not being super explosive. But yeah, it's sort of hard to say 100%.
I don't know. It's a question that's probably like out of my depth of field. But I mean, just like, I don't know, my 38 years of experience. Like, again, if you look at marathon runner or distance runner and a sprinter, it's like two different physiques there. You know, it's like, well, okay, is there something to that? Are they born that way? So they just naturally gravitated towards that, or were they trained that way, or a
Yeah.
combination of the two, like Jeff said? I have no idea. But you know, a sprinter is not
How
gonna be
much
able to
can you
do.
change?
Yeah, it's like, I don't know.
I'm
Like, it's the
sure.
question for me, it's like, okay, if I would have done three or four sets and exercise from the beginning, would I have grown more on that versus, again, I don't know, and I don't want to lose more hair trying to go back in time and think about that stuff.
Yeah.
That's why I feel like it's important. Like, if you're someone new coming into this realm or even an intermediate, don't get married on one thing like I did, because I got basically sucked into the high intensity camp. Literally, it was almost like cult like, hey, join, like, then you identify like, hey, I'm this high intensity guy. So if I would have had this conversation with you guys, like, first 5 years of my training career, 10 years of my training career, even, I would have been probably like, it would have been a versus thing, because I would have been defending Mike Mentzer's ways, and I would have been defending like, these guys are attacking my identity because I like to train hard and to go to failure all the time. So it basically would have closed me off to learning more. But I think it's super important when you come into this realm that you explore as much as you can safely, of course. Try low volume, high intensity. Try higher volumes. Try all kinds of different things. That's how you learn. Try different exercises. You know, that's how you learn like what fits you best. And I think both Jeff and I are good examples. Like, we know ourselves pretty well at this point. Like, we're still open to new ideas. I'm still open, like you said in the beginning of this call. I'm like, well, let me see if I do more volume like Jeff, my arms might grow. I don't know. So it's like, I'm still willing to explore even at an older age. That's how you stay young. That's how you stay relevant too in the field. It's like, if you start just being closed-minded, defending like one way of doing things, man, you're going to become a dinosaur really quick, and you're going to limit your growth, not just physically, but mentally, emotionally as well.
Yeah, for sure. So Jeff Schofield, I think it was within like the last 2 weeks, and you were talking about how if somebody has been training, let's say 10 years, like how could they not know what's worked for them, right? Like after a while, like you kind of determine. And I guess I'm just wondering, because this kind of goes with what Jeff was saying, Jeff Alberts was saying about, he's not really sure after 30 years what he would have done differently. And I don't know if this is us disagreeing or maybe just viewing it differently, but I do kind of wonder how much people sometimes have a lot of confidence in what they did work, and not just with fitness, right? Like, well, how did you become a millionaire? Why? Well, because I did this, and if I did something else, it wouldn't have worked, or somebody else's method, it isn't, as good. But I do wonder how much, not just from like a chance or genetic standpoint, but just that we do so much, how difficult it can be to parse out. Like, I have my favorite exercises over the years per body part, for example, because they feel good to me. They feel stimulative. But I don't know if I could say, like my back is probably one of my stronger body parts. And it's like, well, I've done a lot of deadlifts, pull-ups, and rows over the years, but I don't know if I could tell you that, like, this exact thing. Do you feel like you can really say, like, this is the bicep exercise that is so much better for me than this other bicep exercise, or that just you like it more? Like, where do you kind of fall in that?
Yeah, so it's difficult, and there are so many variables going on, and hypertrophy is a very forgiving adaptation, right? So there are a whole bunch of variables flowing around. You have your intensity, your proximity to failure, volume, frequency, etc. We see a whole bunch of people do different volumes and work, different frequencies and work, different proximities to failure and work. And so I think you can pull different levers and pull the other levers in the opposite direction and get to a pretty similar amount of stimulus and still grow. And I think as long as you're fairly close, it doesn't need to be optimal, I think you'll still grow fairly well. You'll know when something's not working, right? Because I'm sure both of you guys have hit plateaus at times. And so you will notice when something starts working again, right? Especially if the plateau is something that's very distinct and you can see it for a long period of time. When you're very advanced, that's where measuring success and progress can be quite challenging. Like now I'm getting to the point where measuring that and trying to attribute that to one specific exercise, or, oh, I went from doing sets of 8 to 10 to sets of 6 to 8. 6 to 8 was clearly better, like that kind of stuff.
Right.
It's really hard to speak confidently on what exact variables are working because usually it's a range and there are other variables, right? So yeah, at the end of the day, it is just as much art as science, but I also do know some things, right? I know some exercises that they just don't work for me. And no matter how many studies I see on it or any EMG or other people, like every time I try the jam press, I've done a different bunch of different iterations of it. I just it never works for me. And so some people rave about it, but I don't argue with them. I just say, hey, well, it just doesn't work for me. I'll undoubtedly try it for a 10th time at some point, but you kind of have to go by feel just as much as the numbers.
I got a couple perspectives on this, Dave. So I think acutely, we tend to want to find the one thing that's going to be the game changer. And the only way to know that, especially on an individual level, is again, you would have to literally control all your variables for a long period of time doing this one thing and then change it to this other one thing and then control all the variables again for a long period of time. And then you have to be wise enough or experienced enough or knowledgeable enough to actually interpret if the result of that. And so I can go back in time to when I was started out with HIIT training. The first 3 months of doing that, I went from 165 to 195, 190 pounds, saw significant growth, gained some body fat along with that, but it was pretty visible to the eye, even my brothers when I came back, because I was living in Arizona at the time. I came back to California, like, holy shit, what are you doing? Are you taking drugs? I'm like, no, I'm not taking drugs. So prior to that, though, I was the typical I'm going to train 6 days a week guy, doing a lot of volume, but I was under eating. I was like severely under eating, so I wasn't seeing any results. So all of a sudden, like this guy introduced me to HIIT training. He's like, "Hey Jeff, I need you to eat." He didn't tell me how much, so I just started pounding food down. I was in the neighborhood of 4 to 5,000 calories, probably. So yeah, I gained weight, gained strength, gained size, and in my brain, I'm like, "Well, shit, I just found the Holy Grail. Like this is the thing." But now, here this is talking what 30 years ago or so. Now looking in hindsight, what if I would have eaten 4 to 5,000 calories while training 6 days a week? Like, would I have grown? Probably. So it's more like when you look at the bigger picture, it's about supply and demand. So no matter what training program you're doing, if you're not fueling it, you're not getting enough food, you're not sleeping well, you're not, doing all that, keeping stress low, you're not going to be in a great environment to see some gains. But if you bring that supply up and it's outpacing that demand, well, now you're in a much better environment to potentially see gains. And you probably will see gains. Of course, there's a bunch of layers to all this, but it's like from the grand scheme, it's like you have to make sure that your supply is outpacing demand if you want to see growth. Now, of course, where's that at? Like, does it need to be here? Does it need to be here? I mean, that's a whole nother podcast. But just from a big picture perspective, like when I go back in hindsight, that's kind of my question. Like, what would have been better? The hit with a lot of food or the volume with a lot of food? Like, I have no idea. I just know over the last 38 years of my training, as well as with the athletes that I coach, I've never seen an athlete that where the demand is really high and the supply is low, like they're making all these big gains. I always got to outpace it. It's like, okay, is it 100 extra calories a day? Is it 500? Is it 1,000? Like, it just depends on the individual, where they're at in their journey. So there's just so many different layers to this. So that's kind of my perspective is like, just it's really tough to identify. Like the pet peeve I have is like, let's say on Instagram, is when I see someone post the before and after picture, and then they say it's this one thing that I did. I'm like, Well, maybe. And I'm
Yeah.
like, let me ask you a bunch of questions on that. Like, give me the context around both versions. And I
Yeah.
can almost guarantee you, probably 99% of the time, not all variables were controlled in both of those photos. So it's like, is it that one thing you're saying, or could it be a plethora of things that's generated that result?
Totally. Yeah, and I think there's sometimes just something that we can't explain or we don't know. Like obviously something changed, but it's hard to know. Like for example, I do pull-ups twice a week, and I've slowly gone up from about 190 pounds body weight to about 210. And so my pull-ups kind of stayed the same throughout that. But I'm like, all right, well, if I'm pulling up another 20 pounds, let's like call that quote unquote relative progress. Now the question is, will I then also stay the same as I go back down, right? Hopefully I can then increase the reps a little bit. But in any case, 2 weeks ago, I hit a PR and I was like, oh, all right. Like I don't know why I hit that PR, but it was like a, I've been doing this sequence for years and I hit a PR. Like, okay, cool. Next week I matched it. I wish I could tell you what change that I did the same thing pretty much every workout for a year, and then all of a sudden, 2 weeks in a row now, I've hit a PR. I don't have an explanation for it. But so many people talk about like, oh, there's a spurt, right? Random growth spurt of something. Again, obviously, most of the time, I think we can tell something's changed. But I've heard it enough times where it's just like, yeah, I don't know. One, I just felt it this time, and it's just stuck with it. I had a similar thing with bench press back in 2020, and it was like 225 for 12, 225 for 12 the next week, on and on and on. And then one day I just got 14, and then it just stuck, and it just stuck at 14. And I don't know, like, again, just kind of random, but I've had that happen a couple times throughout my training career.
Is that an extra slice of pizza you had right before that session?
It must have been it.
I don't know.
Well, one thing I wanted to talk about with bulking up, because I had Eric Helms on recently. He says he doesn't plan to bulk up anymore beyond maybe, 190 or around there. The Jeff Schofield, you and I have talked a number of times about bulking up leading to some of like the best gains we've ever had and long-term gains. And I know Jeff Alberts, you've talked about maybe not doing that anymore, but also from a health standpoint. So actually I did want to talk about it from a health standpoint, because obviously there are bigger implications at 52 than maybe 32. But I do wonder at what point it starts to become problematic, even for natural lifters, right? I mean, obviously we don't have necessarily the same concerns as some of the enhanced lifters, but I think Jeff Alberts, you were saying that your LDL was recently pretty high and you had to go on a statin. Is that right?
Yeah, 2 years ago I got
2 years,
diagnosed with
okay.
that. So I tried to change habits, because at that point my habits, let's say it was off season, they weren't the greatest. My body weight was over 200 pounds, and that's typical off season for me, 190, 200 in that realm. And I was like, okay, but when you're 200 pounds with bad habits, like you're, eating not, let's say, the greatest foods, I mean, it's going to impact your health. So, I mean, long story short, just cleaned up some habits, lost a little bit of weight, but the numbers weren't coming down, to where my doctor was comfortable. And eventually he's like, hey, you really need to do this statin. And, since then, numbers have come way down.
Jeff, do you mind sharing what your LDL was before and now with the change?
I can't remember the numbers offhand. Talking about me, right?
Yes, Jeff Alberts, sorry.
Yeah, I don't remember the exact numbers.
Okay.
So yeah, the numbers weren't like way high, but they were alarming. And I have a history, like my genetics, my dad's side of the family, heart disease. Even my mom passed away from heart disease. So it's like, well, I need to pay attention to that. So my doctor recommended, like, you do need to go on this statin. So the numbers now are like way below the range. So,
Good.
and I think too, along with contest prepping, like obviously you get really good habits with nutrition and all that. So definitely much healthier now, but it definitely raised that alarm. Like, okay, off season, I don't, at this age and with this much training age under my belt, I don't need to bulk up anymore. Like the chances of me improving muscle mass at this point, like there's a lot of history there. I can go back 10, 5, 15 years and go, okay, I didn't grow that much. So nothing new in the world of science is going to tell me, like, oh, you're going to start slapping on a bunch of muscle, So I don't need to, go up 30 pounds like I used to. So right now I'm about 12 to 15 pounds over stage weight. I say body fat percentage, I don't know, maybe in the 12% range, somewhere in there. But I feel good. You know, I look decent. I'm training well. I'm recovering well. And I can manage the social settings pretty well. So I'm in a good environment right now. And, you know, strategically, from a competitive standpoint, it's a good place to be in because now I don't need to go on these long preps. I can say, okay, I could take 3 or 4 months now in prep, which is a reasonable time versus to get 30 pounds off. Well, now I'm committing 9, 10 months of my life to doing that. And I think too, as a natural bodybuilder, like oftentimes we get really caught up in, I need to make as much gains in the off season. So we're seeing like body weights going up 30, 40, sometimes even 50 pounds. Just remember, you got to come back down. And there's strategy in coming down. And if you're not very strategic and you don't do it wisely, you're going to end up losing what you gained anyway. So, and then the question is can one make more gains being 20 over, 30 over, 15 over? Again, if you look at the supply and demand that I talked about earlier, if you're in a good environment, even if it is 15 pounds over or 12 pounds over, whatever it is, as long as your training is like on the up and up and you're recovering well from it and it's well fueled, you're probably going to end up making progress. The question always is that better than being 20 over or 30 over, like having these bigger surpluses? And again, everything that we've talked about already in the conversation, like variables, right? Like, do you have a stranglehold on everything all the time? And chances are you don't because you're human.
Definitely.
So it's finding that nice comfort zone for people. And think you got to think about the big picture too. Again, like you got to come back down at some point.
Yeah,
And
definitely.
that's a whole nother podcast right there.
I think, well, I have a comment on that, but before I do, I just want to ask, have you noticed any side effects on the statin?
No, yeah, that's one. So like we've tested like my liver and all that, everything is fine, but I haven't really noticed any
No
negative
muscle
effects from taking
pains
it.
or anything
No
like
muscle
that.
pain or anything like that. Yeah. Sometimes my brain, I'm kind of thinking like, well, sometimes when I'm talking, like pause, I'm like, I got to restart things. I'm like, was that from that? Or is that just being 52? Or is, am I tired? Like, again, it's like, what are the variables that are causing that? I don't
It's
know.
yeah, so that's what concerns me with anything like that. Statins, we on the last podcast, Alberto, we were talking about Eric Helms taking finasteride and like some of these things that like as people get older, they can start to take and you have to wonder, excuse me, if it's how much of the side effects are placebo and how much of it is just age. Like with the finasteride example, you know, you get some people who start finasteride at 40 and then they're 50 and they're like, oh, you know, I don't have the same libido. And it's like, well, is that the finasteride or is that because you age 10 years and maybe you're 20
You're
pounds
50
heavier,
now,
right?
man. Yeah.
Exactly. Like,
You want to go on the rocking chair more than, you know what I mean?
right. Yeah, it can be hard to know. So, but that's good that you haven't had any issues there. But regarding the big sways in weight with bulking, I kind of feel like, I mean, it's a little different in your case because you've been competing this whole time. So I can understand wanting to push the weight up. But I think for a lot of people, it's like, you know, if you start at 20 and now you're 37, like, you know, most people don't want to be fat, quote unquote, fat for a third of the year. And they don't want to be like borderline anorexic a third of the year. Like it kind of makes sense to feel like, okay, you've got a good range of 10 pounds. Like for me, that's 190 to 200, maybe it'll be 185 to 195 if I want to be a little leaner. But there's like that range. Like, I look pretty good here. I'm pretty healthy here. I'm pretty happy with like the food and all that stuff. And then you just kind of find a weight that you settle in at. Again, if you're competing, I get it's a little different. But I think probably to some degree, you don't. I am in favor of the not quote unquote dirty bulks, but larger bulks over a long period of time early on. But I do think after some point, it's like, look, man, you probably did this to some degree to look good. You probably don't want to spend, again, all this time at like 22% body fat or whatever it is. So.
Yeah, it's I'm certainly a proponent of bulking, and but I feel pretty good anywhere from 190 to 220, and right now I'm like 223, 224, and that's like if I'm right now about as heavy as I've ever been. But I also don't necessarily think I need to hit a new high. I have hit a new high in body weight, but that's not really what is going to be driving muscular progress, right? Being 21 versus 22% body fat, I mean, the body barely knows the difference. It does a little bit. You know, there's a point where your appetite will just completely shut off. So almost like when you're dieting, there's a point when your appetite will always be on when you get to a certain point. But I feel pretty good anywhere from 190 to 220, which is a pretty big range. Do I need to take that full range every bulk and cut? No. Sometimes I only go to 200 when I'm cutting, and there will probably be a time when I only go to maybe 210 or 215 and have a smaller window. In terms of health, everything is pretty much perfect, with the exception of blood pressure going a little bit high. I remember I got my blood work done at the high of the last bulk at 223 or something, and it was like 120 something, or one maybe 130 over 70 something, so a little bit high. And yeah, that's probably a genetic thing as well. I have family members who they have to have medication to lower it down. So that's probably something I'll have to watch out for. And, I'm not going to be going to probably 240 or 250 because I don't really see the point in that. And I'm also lucky in that aesthetically, I carry the weight fairly well. Like, I still have a 33 inch waist. And so, some people they gain 10 pounds and then they're already up 3 inches on their waist, whereas I'm up 30, almost 35 pounds, and I'm up 3 inches on my waist. So I tend to just carry it everywhere, which is probably better than if you get love handily, if you start to get a lot of it around your organs and stuff. That's probably partially genetic, probably just because I have a small waist, again, genetically. But I don't drink. I stay active. I have a healthy diet, even if there are quite a few calories. And so I do think keeping up with the lifestyle can maybe skew the body fat everywhere, and then also skew the overall weight gain towards hopefully more muscle. But I also think that will I be doing this same strategy when I'm 40, when I'm 45, when I'm 50? I'll be 35 pretty soon. And I do think that bulking is more of a young man's game and more of a young training age game as well. So if I get a client and they're 18 and they're skinny and they want to get huge, yeah, I'm much more prone to suggesting a pretty high calorie target or a pretty high weight gain target compared to someone who is maybe on the older side. Maybe if they've been obese before, like that's where you have to be really controlled with things. And so yeah, it is pretty individual and pretty situational. And it's not something that I'm really attached to either. It's just something that has worked in the past, but it's not necessarily something that will be the best option in the future.
Yeah, for sure. So the last topic I wanted to bring up to you guys was about balance. So Jeff Albrecht on a recent podcast, you had talked about how, at one point you were like very hardcore with everything, and then you said, okay, you want to really take it to the point of just everything's in balance and almost not caring to an extent, and maybe that was a little bit too far the other way, and now you have your current feelings on it, and this is something that can change, right? I've talked to another coach outside of the fitness world, and he had actually said he thinks the idea of balance is almost BS, and basically that anytime he has gotten to something really like a very big accomplishment in his life, it's taken a very dedicated effort, and he's had to put other things in his life on the back burner. So I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on that, both of you guys, on it, on when you've achieved, let's say, your greatest accomplishments, if you were able to do that truly while balancing everything else, or if it had to take away from other things.
I think it's just like now that I've gone through different experiences with that, it's kind of like a sliding scale. Because I do agree, like it's going to take some sacrifice, a lot of energy, a lot of focus. Some other things in life might get put a little bit lower. So I can go back to my 20s and say I was very hyper focused on bodybuilding to a fault because I wasn't paying attention to the things that need to be paid attention to, like my ex-wife, my family, work, those types of things. So it's like bodybuilding came first, no matter what. And yeah, I won some local shows, yay, right? But when all said and done, it's like, okay, now because I'm done with this hyper-focused goal, everything gets put to the front now. Like all those things that you were neglecting and pushing down because you're so laser focused, now they're really in your face. And now you, in a sense, you don't really know how, at least I didn't know how to cope with that and deal with it, because I had all these different things coming at me all at the same time. I can't go hide in bodybuilding anymore. I have to actually address it. So that was a rough patch. You know, even though I was a successful bodybuilder at the time, I wasn't successful in other areas as much as I should have been. Then we fast forward to, you know, when I'm now in my early 40s, I'm remarried and I'm like, I don't want to make the same mistakes again, you know, on that front. So it's like, okay, now I'm going to try to balance, quote unquote, balance this thing a lot more. So it's like, okay, instead of being super hyper-focused on bodybuilding 24/7, I'm now picking my spots. In the past, I wouldn't, like, okay, if I train on Monday, I can't train on Tuesday. I got to train on Monday no matter what. Well, now it's like, well, I can't train on Monday. I'll train on Tuesday instead. So little shifts like that helped. And I realized at the end, like, you know, this goes with diet too. It's like, hey, I can actually go out to eat with my family. I learned how to buffer the now. It's like, okay, I'll just drop calories down early in the day to make it happen for dinner. You know, I was successful. I actually was more successful doing that than in my 20s, because here I am a pro now and I'm winning pro shows while, quote unquote, being more balanced. There was still focus. I was just learning how to put the focus where it needed to be and the right time. We fast forward now, this last prep I had, the balance, I think I took it, I slid it too far, meaning I got a little too relaxed. So the things I did before were like, okay, I'm going to create these buffers for dinner. This is just one example of many, but it was like, well, it's the weekend. I did good Monday through Friday, and I can have a refeed all day on Saturday and Sunday. Well, and instead of eating, let's say, 3,000 calories, it's 3,500, or it's 3,400, or it's 3,700. And then there's no progress. So it's like this cycle of like not seeing a ton of progress. So it's like almost 6 months of doing this and not really, you know, not being fully committed either way. You're kind of just waffling in between. Then I was like, okay, I need to, if I'm going to make it to Worlds at 52 and try to, you know, be at my very best, I'm going to have to slide that scale more to, I got to sacrifice. So long story short is I just realized, like, it's easier for me to nowadays, like at least this last part, would say, okay, to have a conversation with my wife and say, okay, for the next 3 months, I got to go hard and I'm going to have to sacrifice. So now we're both on the same page. We know what to expect. I know what to expect. She knows what to expect. So it's 3 months out of the year that I'm going hard, as opposed to trying to like do this sliding scale and the balance thing for a full year. Cause that's what it would be like. The past preps would be a full year of kind of just doing this in and out thing, which was maybe a little easier on their family on the weekends. But now it's like, they're dealing with that for a year.
Right.
Like, she'd rather just say, hey, rip that Band-Aid off for 3 months. Go and get done with it. Then the other 9 months out of the year, we can live normally. So I don't think it's like a this or that. It's a slight, I think it's a sliding scale. And this can change for me the next time I prep. You know, maybe it's sliding it back more towards 2014, where I was a little bit more relaxed. Maybe it's going way back to my 20s. I'm more hardcore. It just depends on the situation. But I don't think it's a this or that. Because I think I've been interpreted as, oh, you're the balanced guy. You're soft. Like, I've had people tell me that you're soft. You're not soft when you have a 30-year competitive career. Like, I wouldn't consider that to be soft. How many other people out there do something for 30 years on a high level? Not too many. You just learn how to go through, in a sense, life.
Yeah.
And try to do, and be the best that you can, and, you know, try to spread those energies, but it's not always easy. You're going to make mistakes. And that's what I've done. That's the thing. You got to keep your eyes open. When you make mistakes, don't repeat them. Learn from them and try to make things better as you go.
This is why he's the godfather. Such wisdom.
I'm an old fart. That's all right.
So I kind of look at it, and it's super apparent, you know, from watching your journey and your posts, you know, how important your family is and how you've managed to balance that. And it's something I've learned from. I think it's something that anyone can learn from or should learn from, because It is important. And I think sometimes prioritizing training too much all the time actually leads to worse training in some ways. And, I kind of look at it as you have your work, you have your family and social life, and then you have training. And, for me, training is always going to be in the top three priorities in my life. But there certainly have been times when it wasn't number one. And, I think you have to kind of juggle them at times and go with the flow. Like I haven't been working as much this past year, because it turns out I actually have a wife, right? Like I've seen her around the house, and she seems actually really nice. I've gotten to know her. I made a good choice. Good job, past Jeff. And so I've been getting to know her. That's been nice, actually. And then training has been more of a focus now, because for a while YouTube was just like the number one focus, like the only thing really, spending, 8 hours a day on that, or at times 12, 14 hours a day. And so yeah, it is about balance, but it doesn't have to be equally balanced all the time. And you do have to learn, okay, when do I prioritize this? When is this more important? And yeah, to pick your battles. And during this last diet that I did, where I was trying to get really, really lean, one of my goals was to make it easy on my wife. Like, I didn't even tell her, actually. And so, in hindsight, maybe I should have, because then she would know what is going on. And I think probably that's what I'll do in the future, just so we're on the same page. But yeah, my goal was like to have it be not interrupt our life at all. And so, yeah, I don't know. I think you have to go through those experiences sometimes and learn from them. And, consuming your content, Jeff, and seeing how you deal with the dieting, and then with balancing that with the training, and then with family and everything. Yeah, it's definitely given me some ideas with how to do that, because we talk so much about sets and reps and that kind of stuff, but those are almost secondary to the other things in some ways,
You know what's crazy, Dave, is like the guys that will say sacrifice to win. Like, you're gonna be that dickhead at the end of your goal that's holding up your trophy, probably a local show too, like me. Look, I won, but you have no one there supporting you. Then you, like I said, then what do you do after, when it's all done, said and done? Or you're the guy that's going to the gym for 2 or 3 hours a day because they said you have to do 30 sets in a week. So you're spending all this time at the gym doing your 30 sets. But you don't hear those stories when they get home from the gym and their significant other is like complaining, and just now you're in arguments and all this shit about the gym. This is real shit that doesn't get talked about online. It frustrates me when I see like content creators saying, you need to do X this, you need to do X that. Like, let me ask you, are you doing that? Are you really doing that? And if you are, like, what is the impact going on outside of that? And maybe it's great for them, but there's a lot of people out there that, and myself included, that have gone through this, where this sport, this realm, if it's not treated with some type of balance, it's gonna skew things to a point where you're damaging like your real life. And I can tell you this, that when my home life is like really good, my gym life is so much better, because I don't have the stressors. When I'm in the gym, I'm there and I'm feeling great. I'm motivated. I got the energy. I don't have stress. Much more productive workouts. I could probably do a lot more with one set in that environment, versus like now I'm arguing with my wife because I'm doing 30 sets. Like, the question is, how good are those 30 sets? So I try to have a good harmony both in and out of the gym. And that's how you last too. That's how you last 38 years. You can't go hard for 10, 15, 20 years straight without paying attention to some of those other things.
For sure. All right, guys. Well, I thought that was great. I thought, we had a lot of good topics there. Have you guys ever done a podcast or even like talked live together?
Now it's great meeting Jeff
No.
in person. Yeah.
Yeah, likewise. I mean, I've watched your stuff for ages. All the 3DMJ guys. I was lucky enough that I stumbled across your content probably a year into my lifting journey, which in some ways seems so long ago. And now I'm in the fitness industry and it's like weird meeting people whose content I consumed for years and years and years. And this might sound a little bit dramatic. Like they say, don't meet your heroes, but I've talked to a ton of guys who, you know, I really look up to and I've watched their stuff for years and everyone's been super, super nice. You know, it's nothing but good stories all around. So yeah, thank you guys for putting out so much good content and, you know, educating the masses, not just on how to gain mass, but on how to do it in a balanced way. And yeah, just a heartfelt thank you.
I appreciate that, Jeff. Right back at you, man.
Look at this. Brains and Gains podcast, bringing people together.
See, I told you it wasn't a versus. It's, like, it's not a versus.
Right, right. So, all right, guys. So where can we find you? Jeff Alberts, let's start with you. Seniority.
3DMJ Godfather on Instagram, 3DMuscleJourney.com, and Team 3DMJ at YouTube.
And Jeff Schofield.
Jeffrey Verity Schofield on YouTube and Instagram with the G, GEOFF, and I'll probably hopefully autocomplete. And then veritifit.com for books.
Awesome. And you can't find me anywhere because Instagram doesn't want me to have an account apparently. So hopefully we'll get that back. But all right, guys, thank you again.